Next week in Cleveland and the following week in Philadelphia, Republicans and Democrats will gather for a ritual that has become almost entirely ceremonial. With votes at their nominating conventions, each party will select, that's in air quotes, pre-selected candidates. There has not been a second round of voting, a second ballot, at a major party presidential convention since 1952. Our movie critic Bob Mondello thinks he knows exactly what a contested convention would be like, though, and he says he bets you do too.
The crowd is raucous, the din oppressive, and a whole lot of once pledged but now freed up delegates are being furiously lobbied.
You want me to promise him a defense contract?
I don't care if you promise him half the Pentagon budget, just get him to stick with us through the third ballot.
TV's West Wing featured a contested convention a decade ago.
How much longer?
Maybe 30 minutes.
And what?
And they start the second ballot and my hairline recedes about 3 inches.
And House of Cards is doing the same thing this season.
11 for Claire Underwood.
Today has certainly been full of surprises, hasn't it? But then again, Louisiana is the state that gave us Huey Long, after all.
Why dramatize brokered conventions? Well, because a conventional convention isn't very interesting. If, as usually happens, primary voters have already selected the nominee before the delegates gather, there's no drama, just speeches and a vote where everyone knows the outcome, but it still takes ages to get to the balloon drop.
Over an hour of just calling names?
Democracy in action.
More like agriculture in action, like watching grass grow.
Second ballot won't be.
The dramatic appeal of a second ballot is that those committed delegates stop being committed, and once that happens, as characters in HBO's political comedy Veep discovered, the possibilities are endless.
In the middle of a convention?
I know!
Chung is our answer to Montez. He can be our minority retort. Yes?
It's like Christmas, except happy.
Television makes much of this because when television had just been born in 1952, it got to cut its teeth on conventions by watching the Democrats take three ballots to nominate Adlai Stevenson.
Ladies and gentlemen of the convention, I accept your nomination and your program.
TV had just gone national at that point, and nobody'd figured out yet how to stage things for the camera. Barely any signs or balloons, no cameras sweeping the hall. Still, there had been suspense about this outcome, and that kept audiences tuned in. Better than the first year radio covered a convention, 1924.
After nearly 100 ballots.
Yes, you heard that right, 100 ballots. 103, actually, for the Democrats to choose someone to lose to Calvin Coolidge. It was in between those two real contests that conventions started interesting fiction writers. Novelist Sinclair Lewis made a contested convention central in his Depression-era novel It Can't Happen Here, which pictures the rise of a populist who sounds surprisingly modern. Fictional candidate Buzz Windrip believes that the U.S. should be run like a corporation. He whips up increasingly violent crowds, argues that the U.S. should go to war with Mexico, and over the objections of his own party's bosses, becomes not just president, but a Hitler-like dictator. His rise starts at a contested convention in Cleveland, where party leaders watch helplessly as he claims to have, and I'm quoting the novel here, thoroughly tested but unspecified plans to make all wages very high and the prices of everything produced by these highly paid workers very low, that he's in favor of the United States so arming itself and so preparing to produce its own goods instead of importing them that it could defy the world. And maybe, I'm still quoting here, if that world was so impertinent as to defy America, he might have to take it over and run it properly. End quote. That is from Sinclair Lewis's It Can't Happen Here, written in 1935. In the novel, it takes 92 pages to get this populist his party's nomination. Things zip along faster in screenplays. Say, State of the Union, where newspaper owner Angela Lansbury tries to deadlock a convention to make her married boyfriend, Spencer Tracy, president.
Wouldn't you like to become chairman of the Republican Party?
Okay, the best we could go into that convention move would be a small handful of delegates.
Communists have taken over whole countries with a small handful of delegates.
One thing you learn from movies about political conventions, Angela Lansbury should not be allowed anywhere near them. 14 years later, in The Manchurian Candidate, her anti-communism had turned more forceful.
Are there any communists in the Defense Department? Of course not. They're saying, how many communists are there in the Defense Department? So just stop talking like an expert all of a sudden and get out there and say what you're supposed to say.
Now she wasn't just plotting to deadlock, she was plotting an assassination.
John, you gotta stop this thing. Stop it. How can I stop it? I want to have...
If there was a bomb planted here, you got a tip that there was, you'd stop it fast enough, you'd empty the White House if you had to.
Manchurian Candidate paints about as dire a portrait of a political convention as there's ever likely to be. But other works have doodled intriguingly around conventional edges. Gore Vidal's Broadway play The Best Man, for instance, which opened during the Kennedy-Nixon campaign and was turned into a movie in time for the Johnson-Goldwater one. It was designed to settle a few scores. Vidal was a political commentator who idolized Adlai Stevenson and didn't have much use for the Kennedys, so when one of his dueling candidates was a principled intellectual, played by Henry Fonda, and the other a TV-savvy but craven opportunist, it wasn't hard for audiences to guess who was whom.
Now, don't get me wrong. I've got a lot of respect for William Russell.
Thank you, Joe.
But I don't think he's got the people's touch.
No, I would not buy a used car from that man.
Though directed at the JFK-like candidate in The Best Man, that's a riff on an anti-Nixon campaign poster, Would You Buy a Used Car from This Man? Vidal knew that blurring lines a little makes Trump Loy more effective, and those kinds of reality-echoing lines are just as fashionable today.
As much as I would like to discuss this, the business of the presidency, Trump's running for it.
That particular verb, Trump's, has added resonance this year, as the writers no doubt knew when they employed it in their House of Cards version of an unconventional convention. I'm Bob Mondello.
Bob's thinking on this piece was inspired by NPR's summer recommendation series, Read, Watch, Binge. You can check it out at npr.org/arts.